Okay, I'm coughing. I have to say that when I'm nervous, I cough. Yeah, so I'm trying to just way to go 4 years, and tomorrow's my birthday, so it'll be my fifth Smover birthday, actual belly button birthday, so that is also very exciting. Hi, Robert. My name is Leslie. I am a very, 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 very grateful recovering nicotine addict. One of the reasons that I am so grateful, I am grateful for this addiction, is because this addiction absolutely brought me to my knees. I have been sober for a long time and drug-free for a long time. I've been in a lot of other fellowships, as most of us have. I have done steps in other fellowships. I've done a lot of work, but I was not prepared for what happened to me when I stopped smoking, when I put down the nicotine, and you know, it just felt like, well, it was horrible. So we'll get to that after. My life has changed so dramatically from not smoking that at this point in time, my 4 years, here are my stats. I'm going to qualify for anyone who's listening who doesn't know me. Hello out there in listening land. I'm going to qualify myself. I have saved $38,130 American dollars, or 30,500 pounds. By not smoking 70,114 cigarettes. I am sober 4 years, 1 month, and 3 weeks, and 3 days. I smoked for 41 years from the age of 13 to 54. I was a smoker. I loved it from the moment I smoked. I just loved it. My mother smoked. My father smoked. My mother used to order cartons of cigarettes from the pharmacy. Everyone smoked. You know, I smoked. I tried cigarettes when, you know, my parents would have people over before they went out for dinner, and there would be butts in the ashtray. And my sister, who was 6 years older, she was probably smoking by then, so she was like, smoke. And my father smoked those huge Dunhill cigars, and he's like, sit on my lap and smoke. And everyone smoked, and so we smoked. And I just smoked. I couldn't imagine my life without cigarettes. My cigarettes were like my best friend in the whole wide world. That they were with me all the time. And then what ended up happening is people stopped smoking. But I kept smoking. And, you know, it was okay when everyone was smoking. And I had, you know, my life sort of went on and it was great. And then once people stopped smoking, and then, you know, smoking is gross and you stink, and all of a sudden, my circle of friends and my circle of life got smaller and smaller, because what I realized is people did not leave me. My relationships did not end because people left me. I left relationships because they weren't smoking the way I did, and they weren't drinking the way I did. And, you know, but they weren't smoking anymore, and I didn't want those looks or feelings, or I just was ashamed. I was ashamed of smoking because I was a chain smoker. I could not have one cigarette. Like, people are like, oh, I smoke when I'm, you know, only when I'm drinking, or I only smoke 5 cigarettes a day. Like, I've understood the concept that it doesn't make a difference if you smoke 5 cigarettes, 50 cigarettes, it's what it does to you. So, I mean, you know, I've gotten past that, but I just couldn't do that. Because I just literally constantly would feel like I would explode from the inside out, and that I would die, like my skin was being peeled off by a fork if I wasn't smoking. So I smoked all the time, except when I was sleeping. But when I, you know, I was in my bedroom, and then, you know, when I got up to go to the bathroom, I would smoke. And even, you know, when I was working and I couldn't smoke for 4 hours, I'd go on my lunch break for half an hour, and I could smoke like 10 cigarettes, just one after another. And I tried to quit. I wanted to quit. I tried this course, kind of like BP thing that sort of spaced out your cigarettes. That didn't work. and I tried like the Alan Carr Easy Way, which kind of worked. I was very surprised. It did work for a bit, but then, you know, what I've learned is it's not about the cigarettes. It's not about, for me, I just couldn't get sober by just putting down a cigarette. There's all sorts of reasons why I smoked. And so though I tried these things and I was able to stop smoking, the moment someone looked at me sideways or the moment there was a party or excitement or anger, I was right there smoking. You know, and I tried it all and I just couldn't stop no matter what. And I mean, I suppose I had times where I stopped for maybe 2 weeks or something like that. But I was completely and utterly white knuckling it. You know, and I was counting every second. And though we have a quit meter here and we share our time, if I don't have my quit meter, I can't sort of tell you what it is. I mean, I know only because I just had my 4-year birthday, but you know, I can't really tell you because I don't go in 4 years. Every single day I ask my higher power to keep me nicotine free. And every night I go to bed and I'm like, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for keeping me nicotine free, because my higher power is doing for me what I could not do for myself. My higher power brought me into this program. My higher power is Bonner. You know, like how many times I wanted to quit smoking and sort of ask for help. And I never found Bonner. But at the end, I was so desperate. I was so desperate to stop. I couldn't imagine my life without cigarettes. And I wanted to kill myself. And I thought to myself, the only way that I will ever be nicotine free is if I kill myself. And I'm very happy to say is that I have enough sobriety in me. And I have kids that I love, that I wasn't willing to do that. And you know what? I never wanted to kill myself. I just wanted to stop the world. I just wanted to get off for a while because I couldn't cope. And so, you know, I didn't want to die, but I didn't know how else that I couldn't imagine myself not smoking. I was the last of everyone. Even my mother, who was like the type of smoker that we'd all be in the car on a family vacation and she'd be puffing away and we'd be like, please, please open the window. And she would crack it like a hundredth of a billionth of a centimeter of a billionth of a centimeter and go, there, the window's open. You know, she didn't care. She didn't care at all. And so I don't remember what I was saying about smoking. And so, you know, there was always cigarettes to me. I just couldn't imagine my life without cigarettes. There was just always cigarettes in my life. And I really, really, really wanted to quit. But I couldn't see it. And so what someone had said to me, you know, beforehand, is that keep praying for the willingness to stop smoking, but keep smoking. You know, God knows you're smoking. There's no point in hiding it from your higher power. Just keep praying for the willingness. And me, I was like, I'm praying for the willingness to be willing, 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 to be willing to quit smoking, you know? And I just kept praying for the willingness to stop because I just was desperate. And, you know, my kids, I'd like to say that when I was pregnant with my son, the doctor said I had to quit smoking and I tried and my anxiety level was so through the roof that he put me on anti-anxiety medicine because he said, your anxiety is worse for your baby than smoking. I could not give up cigarettes when I was pregnant. I couldn't. I wanted to, trust me. I really, really wanted to. But the most important thing in the world to me was feeding my addiction, was keeping what I thought, because what I thought nicotine did for me, it suppressed emotions, my anger especially, and it kept everything down. And I thought that was the whole point, is to sort of keep it down. Because I thought that if I got angry or I let my emotion out, I would be a raving lunatic and they'd have to put me away. And I just couldn't feel. I mean, when I wasn't smoking, as I shared before, it was like someone was peeling my skin off with a fork. And I couldn't cope with that. I just, you know, because the only thing I had going for me was my cigarettes. And I did have a higher power because I did stop drinking, and I started drinking at 10 and a half and smoking at 13. So, I mean, I was using way before. And so I knew that God was there, but I really truly didn't think that he was big enough to stop my smoking. And I stopped drinking and everything else while I was smoking. You know what I mean? I used cigarettes. And so, but I just couldn't cope. I just, you know, and so I just kept praying for the willingness to stop smoking. And then I write. And when I write at the top of my page, I give myself permission to write crap. Because I would find that I would sit down and the pressure to be perfect, which was a huge thing that I used to deal with, and I'd like to say was, is that it has to be perfect. And I realized this is exactly what I'm doing with my nicotine, is, you know, I have to quit, and life is grand. And so what I started doing, like I realized also, is that I was here, I need to stop smoking. I got to stop smoking. I must stop smoking. I should, I must, I need. And I thought to myself, these are not my words. These are someone else's words forcing me to do something. And as an addict, if you tell me to what's it called, not do something, I'm like, oh, there I am. I'm going to do it because that is my thing. And so, hold on a second. Can you just hold a second? Sorry, that's right in the middle of my share. That's my son has to come in. Hello, and that's taped. Isn't that exciting? I can't remember what I was saying. Isn't that awful? I was sharing, oh yeah, about words and realizing those are not my words. Those are my parents. Those are caretakers. Those are people telling me, you know, you should do this and you should do that and you're bad and whatever. And I thought I'm going to try this. And this time I'm going to claim my power for my smoking, even though I'm powerless and God has it. It was like, this time I'm going to be responsible, because it was almost like every time I said I need to and I should to, I was like giving the responsibility of my smoking to someone else, if that sort of makes sense. And so I started to say, you know what, screw you. I give myself permission to smoke. I'm going to smoke. I don't care what anyone thinks. You know, I don't care what my kids say. I don't care what anyone says. I'm going to smoke, and I'm just going to smoke. That's me. I'm a smoker, and I'm going to smoke, God. And God, when you think that I'm ready to stop smoking, fill me in. But in the meantime, I'm going to smoke. And I have to tell you, it was 11 days later that I stopped smoking. It was 10 days or 9 days later that I found Vonner. But it was somehow in the taking responsibility for my nicotine use where it brought me into Vonner. I was desperate. I was sick and tired, and I was desperate. And I came in, and I was so grateful to find this program. And I made my quit for Monday morning because, you know, we can't do this during the week. It has to be like starting to be in the week, or else it just doesn't care. You know, I've shared this before. I keep thinking, oh, do I have time? And used to have like a 20-pack of cigarettes. I smoke 17, take 3 cigs, leave them in a pack, toss them somewhere in my house so that I always had spare smokes. Like if I ran out of cigarettes and I had to go to the store, I knew that somewhere in the house I had a pack with at least 3 cigarettes that could get me to the store, because I could not be without cigarettes. You know, I mean, I got up early, went to bed late. I was totally exhausted. I was falling down, bumping into stuff because I was not present. I was, you know, I could talk to you and I looked like I was there, but all I was thinking about is when will you shut up so I could smoke? You know, and I would sit outside and I would smoke and chain smoke and chain smoke and chain smoke, or I would be in the bathroom if it was raining and my daughter thought I had cancer or something wrong with my insides because I was in there all the time, and she would sit outside the bathroom door and tell me how a day was. I mean, that sucks. But, you know, I wanted to stop smoking. I really, 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 really wanted to. But I couldn't. And you know what? I'm going to tell you something. I do not get angry at myself about that, because I truly believe is that I had to smoke every single cigarette that I did in order to get myself to where you know, to where I got to stopping. You know, I had to do what I had to do until I didn't have to do it anymore. And beating myself up is not going to get me more sober. It's not going to help my program. Shaming myself, it didn't help when my parents did it, when my teachers, you know, and so I just go, that's what I had to do. I just had to do that, you know, and just get on with life. And so on my last night, on Sunday night, I gathered up all my cigarettes and I bought a couple of packs just in case so that I knew that I would have enough because there wouldn't be anything worse than running out the night before I'm quitting. So I was going to smoke myself into illness, right? And so I remember sitting in the bathroom, like first I was outside and everyone was smoking. I'm like, I'm quitting. So, you know, I'm quitting. Go away. I'm allowed to do this. And I was in the bathroom. It was late at night and I was smoking one cigarette after another and I was feeling so nauseous. I mean, I was coughing and I felt so unbelievably ill. I'm sure I had smoked like 70 cigarettes by then. And it was 2 o'clock in the morning and there was one cigarette left. One cigarette. And I have to go to bed. I just have to go to bed because it doesn't start at midnight. It started when I woke up. That's when my quit starts, you know. And I could not throw that cigarette out. I couldn't. I just couldn't. And I woke up in the morning, even though I was quitting, and there was one cigarette there. And I had to smoke it. And I had to smoke it. And I just, and then I ended up going to buy cigarettes. And I thought to myself, this is the ultimate in being powerless. I am so powerless over nicotine that I couldn't even throw that one cigarette away. I am powerless over nicotine and it makes my life so unmanageable that I don't care about anything or anyone. I will sell you down the road for a smoke to keep my addiction, you know, in check. And so I smoked that day but I kept praying to my higher power and, you know, begging because I have no shame when I talk to God. And he's not religious, but, you know, he's my bud. And I talked to him and I feel much better. And I just was begging. And the next morning I got up and I bought cigarettes. And then it was time for the 11 a.m. meeting. And I thought to myself, I can go get cigarettes now or I can go to this meeting. I can, you know. And for any of you who are clean and sober or smober, for me, it was that little window that said, this is it. This is, you know, the window climbed through it. And I used patches because it never, ever occurred to me as a heavy smoker to go cold turkey. And for you all that have gone cold turkey, you know, it's unbelievable. I can't imagine doing it. And I used NRTs for 42 days. And, you know, there was a little bit of, I could tell from people, oh, this is Nicotine Anonymous. Well, that was my path. And again, I am not going to let anyone shame me. Because it's how I got nicotine free. It was my path, and I kept praying. And one day, I realized at night that I hadn't put a patch on. It was 42 days. And then from then on, I didn't have any patches. And my husband had a heart attack. But 4 days later, 3 days later, and I brought all of my NRTs to the hospital because I thought I would need them, and I didn't. And then about 3 weeks later, my cat had a terrible accident or got sick or something. We were almost going to have to put him down. And again, I thought, I'm going to need to smoke. You know, my husband, I love him. God bless. But it's my cat. And I really was devastated. And I didn't. And everyone who was there knows that I sat on the floor when my husband had a heart attack in the ICU ward, heart attack ward, on the floor in the bathroom, talking in a meeting. And I kept you guys in my pocket. I mean, there was a lovely woman here, Wendy, we haven't seen her in ages, and she used to open up the room for me at all times of the day because though I'm Canadian, I live in the UK, there weren't meetings for me. And I would be like going completely out of my mind and I would contact her and she would open up the room. And, you know, that kept me smoker because I was a professional smoker. I wasn't working at the time and I didn't know how to do anything but smoke. Honestly, my whole world was crashing in on me and wasn't drinking and I wasn't doing drugs. I was just trying, like smoking was a giant band-aid and I couldn't cope. And so I was just smoking and I had most of my days were smoking. So I didn't know what to do with myself. I didn't know how to live properly. I didn't know how to do anything but smoke and think about quitting smoking. So I came here and I went to meeting after meeting after meeting. And even for your 7 o'clock, which is midnight meeting, I would be like lying in bed with the earphones and half asleep. And then I would get up, you know, for your midnight meeting. And then I found a sponsor and I started doing my steps. And I loved that because it gave me something to do and it gave me something to hold on to. And it moved me forwards because the steps for me clear the wreckage of your past. Now, for me, and I'm sure a lot of you are, are you still there? You know, smoking is my problem. I didn't smoke because I smoked. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, there was a lot of trauma growing up. There was a lot of bad stuff. I did a lot of bad stuff because I was drinking and a lot of stuff was done to me. And, you know, my nicotine was sort of keeping it down. And when I took the nicotine away, boy, did I feel bad. And if you're new, boy, are you going to feel bad. But then you feel better. And then you feel really bad again. And then you feel better. And then you don't. And then you start to feel better. And then each time it's less bad. But, you know, then I would go through points where it's like God would take me to the point where I would think I cannot cope anymore. I can't. The pain that I'm feeling in recovery is so intense as I deal with the situation. That's it. I can't. And then shortly thereafter, it would be like smooth sailing for a week or a month or whatever. But to me, there was never an option to pick up. Once I started to experience freedom without cigarettes, and I think that is, it was the big thing about the NRTs. It was the taking away the hand to mouth and the constantly moving my hands and my mouth. And that started to give me some form of peace. And also after, you know, with the being just nick free, I wasn't constantly thinking about me stinking. And I started to be present because I didn't have to get up and move every 2 seconds. I didn't have to constantly lie. I didn't have to think about where was I going to get the money to pay for my cigarettes. And so I started to have some form of peace. I mean, my head would, you know, go all over the place. But basically, I mean, that was a part of, you know, of starting to feel my feelings. And anyone who knows me knows what is my, you know, my favorite slogan is, if you're not feeling, you're not healing. And I got to the point where I decided that I was going to do anything to stay nicotine free. There was a turnover that whatever I did, there is healing that will make you feel better, and there is healing. There is pain that will kill you, and there is pain that will heal you. And I decided that I was willing to go through any form of pain if it was going to heal me. And I could see that it was healing me because I could see it in other people that were going through stuff and they didn't pick up a cigarette. And so then that gave me the courage to go through something, whether it was through my therapist or through with my job or my boss. And it gave me the courage to feel my feelings and not pick up. And I just started, I mean, I felt free. I mean, if you're smoking, and you know, that's what you got to do. You got to smoke until you don't have to smoke anymore. But this, you know, I was so, the outside world controlled, you know, what you said and what you did and the way you looked at me controlled the way that I felt. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I felt. I was so on the out, I don't know how to explain it, sort of like, I didn't quite understand how to live life without nicotine, without saying, keeping my feelings down. And I was sort of all over the place. And I was saying things that were maybe in a, like I was like, oh, you know, I was like, jumping to conclusions. And I was very, let's say, aggressive when I came in and angry, because I was angry. I was angry at myself and I was angry at people. But what I realized that under the anger was a lot of grief. And I cried and I cried and I cried and I cried and I felt. And then I thought, I just can't do this anymore. I need some relief. I can't. But I didn't want to smoke. I wasn't going to pick up. There was a turning point of going, the freedom is worth everything in the whole wide world. You know, I'm going to share that. I know that's early recovery, but I need to share. I went home in October. I have to go backwards now because this is where I'm at, because it's really very good. And yeah, so I went home in October, and I hadn't been home for 6 years. I had my mother, slightly insane, and I had to work on issues through this program. I did my steps, but what the steps brought up was more, and my sponsor is not a therapist. So I had to find other ways to look at my stuff in a safe environment. I was always, you know, my mother stopped smoking, that's right, 20 years before me. And so she loved to shame me and she whatever. And so I wasn't prepared to go home. I wasn't ready to go back to my hometown because I still felt in myself like a child and like I was bad and I wasn't good enough. Because every time I picked up a cigarette, it was almost like I was reshaming myself, you know, and I was doing that 500-600 times a day with 10 puffs of cigarette. And so I didn't feel ready to go home yet. I didn't know who I was, and I still felt ashamed. And when I went home in October, almost 4 years nicotine-free, having done a lot of therapy, having done my steps, having come to hundreds of meetings, having had sponsees and sponsors and watched my friends in here go home, go here, do this, do that, that these people gave me the courage to say, you know, we're with you. That's why I love having my four-year chip or my chip in my pocket or with me all the time, because it's like having my whole Vonner and Nicotine Anonymous with me. I am not alone. Now, I used to think no one understands the way I smoke. No one knows the pain that I've been through. My pain is so awful. My smoking is, you know, I was so alone, and I thought that I had to be alone. And then people here gave me the courage to go back home and to keep doing meetings. There was a convention going on at the time. And then I was in America so that I could start talking to people on your time zone and do more meetings. And they were like, how's it going at home? And it was, you were like my sisters and my brothers. And, you know, my higher power was with me. And I was praying and praying and praying. And I sort of kept to, as much as I could, a meeting schedule. Because, you know, people say, hey, you still go to meetings? I will go to meetings for the rest of my life. You know, I would do anything to get a cigarette. And I am the opposite. I will do anything to stay sober. And I went home and I didn't stay with my mother, because I'm not going to put myself in a position to want to use at all. And my mother threw like a little party for me, and it was the most incredible, what time is it? The most incredible event, because I was present. And I wasn't out on the balcony smoking. So, you know, like I used to have to stick to a certain bunch of people that even if I didn't like you, whether it was at work or a party or whatever, because we smoked. And I felt able to hug my family and to talk to my family. And I felt like I had grown up. Like my husband even said, I was 3 months nicotine free. And he said that I'd grown up more in those 3 months than my like 17 of alcohol sobriety or 18, whatever it was. That touch, putting down the nicotine and starting to deal with my stuff, it changed me. And I went home, and, you know, I went to my high school reunion and I rented a car. And normally renting a car was an absolute nightmare because I smoked and I had to have the window open and I was afraid that I would burn the back seat. You know, the wind would blow an ash. And I was able to drive with the window down. And so I drove, you know, in peace. I went like free and in peace. I was able to go to bed and be present. You know, someone had said to me something about, oh, you know, you're always falling down. I said, you know what? I used to fall down. I used to break a lot of stuff. That's because my mind was elsewhere. It was on smoking. And now my mind, my brain is here where I am now. And it's only because I don't use nicotine anymore. I was so afraid to stop. I thought I can't. And I can't. But my higher power can. You know, this is the whole thing, is that my higher power is doing for me what I cannot do. And the moment I admitted that I was powerless, not 99% powerless, like all the other times I stopped, I was white knuckling it because there was, imagine if like the nicotine is this giant transformer, do you know what I mean? And you're like, I don't know, whatever they, not a Weeble or something like that, trying to push this transformer away. And it's a lot of energy. But the moment I admitted that is it, I am beat. I am 100% powerless. Smoking makes my life unmanageable. I have no power against nicotine. It's like my higher power stepped in front of me and basically, you know, gave the transformer nicotine the flick, bug off. And my higher power is in front of me. And because my higher power is able to keep me nicotine free without, you know, staying out of jail, without not white knuckling it or being a crazy person, I give my higher power everything in my life. You know, I just, every single day, I do a third step prayer. I don't know, jobs, everything that I do, I talk to my higher power. And, you know, had no choices before because nicotine decided who my friends would be, where I would go, what I would do. We didn't go on any holidays because, you know, look at my, what did I say, $38,000 for 4 years of smoking. That's what, $6,000 a year on cigarettes. And that is only quit meter money. It's not all the crap that I bought at the store while I was there. Magazines and gum and body spray and whatever the hell else. And as I was sitting on the computer chain smoking, and then I was on Amazon, or do you know what I mean? And so it's not to say that we have that money floating around now, but, you know, I had no choices there. And now I have choices. And what I find interesting is that, you know, this program also brought into other programs because I realized I had other issues, you know, and I had to deal with them. And as long as I don't pick up, as long as I feel it, I may feel like I'm going to die, but I'm not going to die. I may feel like it's happening right away, but it's not happening. And with my sponsor, and I don't have a therapist anymore. I do other stuff. I do EFT and tapping, whatever like that. And people I talk to and meetings that I come to, it's keeping me sort of check. And, you know, I used to take everything personally. I used to, you know, if someone said something in a meeting or looked at me, I was like, oh my God, I'm a horrible person. I can never come back to this meeting. Everybody hates me, blah, 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 blah. And what I realized in my recovery is 98% of that has nothing to do with me. Just like when I would get mad at you or snap at you for something stupid, it was just old stuff rearing its head. You sounded like someone I knew that hurt me, or, you know, and I've had this opportunity to learn, like, who I am. I swear, I didn't know who I was when I came in here. And, you know, because nicotine really made my choice for everything. And I didn't know what I liked or who I liked or, you know, people told me what I liked. My parents told me, oh, this is a great movie. This is a great recipe, whatever. I didn't. And I was like, okay, because I'm a piece of poop, you know, because I felt like that all the time because, you know, even though I knew that I was an addict and I was, you know, what I was doing was because of addiction, I still was just swallowed up by shame. And then, you know, every day I didn't smoke. Every day I don't pick up. It gives me a bit more clarity and esteem and courage to just sort of walk a different path. And, you know, I have to say, what time do I have? I have all these things that I was going to say, and who the hell knows what I said, right? I'm going to tell you that I got promoted at work on Thursday. They told me, and yesterday sort of accepted after I had a discussion with my son who threw back in my face everything that I've ever said to him about delivery and, you know, courage. And I went into this job and I realized that a lot of places, a lot of people that I have had in my life, my addiction chose. And just because that person didn't like me or that job wasn't good for me, it didn't necessarily mean that I was a bad person. You see, I used to think that I was bad. And what I realized is I'm not a bad person, but my addiction makes me do bad things. And my low self-esteem and my unhealed emotions and trauma, they make me do unsavory things. But me, myself, I'm not a bad person. And, you know, my last job, my blood pressure was like 240/70. And I was, you know, me, bubbly. And they just didn't like it. And I got this new job in November. And it's like, you know, I asked my higher power to help me, you know, help me raise the vibration of the universe, help me find the place where, you know, I can be of use, my talents, my skills, my recovery, you know, help me do these things. And I found this job and these people love my energy. They shape it, but they utilize it and they see it as a good thing. And so this new guy came in 2 weeks ago and he offered me a job of promotion to be like a team leader. And, you know, I'm going to be 58 tomorrow and I've never had a promotion. I mean, you know, I've never really had anything because I would either quit or I was too afraid to sort of ask for anything because I didn't think I don't have the skills and I don't have, you know, if they really know what I'm like, they're going to think, they're going to see that I'm really a bad person and I'm an addict and blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? And that is the way I felt. And when I talked to my son yesterday morning, because I told the guy, no, I don't want the job. No, thanks. My son was like, Mom, you're not that way anymore. You know, they see you. You have been there for 8 months. They know exactly how you are. They would not ask you to do this job if they didn't think you could do it. Stop listening to your head, you know? And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, my kid pays attention. And I, you know, went in there just like today and I asked, you know, I asked my higher power to be part of the conversation. And, you know, I had like a moment to talk to God because I, you know, I wouldn't be where I was without my higher power. You know, I wouldn't be nicotine free. I look at myself and I cannot believe I am the same person even from 6 months ago or a year ago or 4 years ago when I came to this program. I mean, you know what they say, and it's an AA, you know, beyond your wildest dreams. Whatever I thought would be beyond my wildest dreams, you know, I thought that I should be sort of higher up in the job or different, whatever. And I'm happy. I have this sort of little job in a very large supermarket. And I have customers that I just love. I hear stories. I love talking to them. And, you know, and I make people feel good. And, And I found a place that's sort of what I'm supposed to do, is to bring light or bring joy in that way and not in a big, giant way. You see, I grew up that I had to be something, that if I wasn't something, then I wasn't good enough. Until I had a degree, until I had a this, until I had a car, until I had whatever, I was nothing. And I lived my life waiting for the day that I had this, and then I could start my life. And it wasn't until I put down the nicotine. And I got to tell you, people, I have never felt pain in my life like I did when I quit smoking. I really thought I was going to be that person that would combust, would explode from pain. I really thought, I am going to die here. I can't. But then I thought, you know, it can't be any worse. Smoking is not working anymore. And that pain, at least this pain, wasn't physically killing me, you know, and I didn't do it alone. That's the whole thing, is you don't have to suffer alone. We are here. You walk this path with us. Every single one of the people in this room right now had to come in their first time, had to have 1 hour nicotine free, unless, you know, you're not, but you may have had 1 hour nicotine free. I don't know. You know, you are not alone, and you're not shamed in here. I have never seen anyone relapse and be shamed at all in another fellowship, because they're like, oh my God, why don't you just stop? Oh, really? I've never thought about that. How about you stop eating 12,000 cookies and putting 400 tablespoons of sugar in your coffee, Mr. AA person, and then we'll talk about, you know, me just stopping cigarettes, because I didn't want to just stop. I wanted a life that you promised me, you know, and I had to do that with my, you know, at the beginning with my delay, distract, drink water, dance, do anything, go to meetings, read stuff, do the pamphlets, get on the phone, go for a walk, do anything, but not pick up. It is not an option. Just do anything, but don't pick up, and pray, you know, if you have a higher power. Or, I don't know, what, for me, it has to be something bigger than myself. It had to be. But I, you know, I deal with people now, and I'm learning to say no. No, thank you. Like, boundaries. I know this is unacceptable for me, for you. I don't have to tell everyone anything anymore. And you know, I was so desperate for attention and love when I came in here. I was so needy. And that's okay. If you're new and you think, oh my God, you know, I can't call that person because, oh God, no, I've called her already. Do it. You know, and oh, my thing isn't big enough. Because my thing was like, I'm not going to smoke. I don't think I'm not going to smoke, but I feel like I'm a crazy person. But I can't call that person because I don't feel like I'm going to smoke. Call that person. Do you know what I mean? And it helps us. It helped the person that I called by calling them, because they were of use, they were able to share the program. That's what step 12 is all about. And it's just like being in a meeting when, you know, you're listening. For one of the things that was very important to me is that I felt completely disconnected. I'm a huge isolator, or I was a huge isolator. You know, I was too afraid of what people would think and what would people say and my weight. And I don't care. Really, honestly, I don't. It's my life, and I'm catching up for all the isolating that I did. But I wanted to be connected. I was so desperate to be connected, and I didn't quite understand, you know. And so what I find is that I try my best to share, or, you know, in a meeting, because then I feel part of, and I feel like I was at the meeting. And, you know, I used to think I have nothing to say, except, you know, I can chat, but, you know, I have nothing to say. What am I going to say? And, you know, for a newcomer, you always have something to say. Even if it's just hello, it's bringing you into the room, and you're part of it. You know, your whatever you think is nonsense could save someone's life. You know, 5 words could give someone else the courage to share, and that could save their life. It's not always about you. I mean, you know, the newcomer, whatever, but sometimes, I don't know, I had to push so far past my comfort zone in order to get to where I am today. And I just, you know, I walk around and I'm like so grateful I don't smoke. I mean, I see people, this woman, I was taking my daughter to work and she was standing outside on a busy street smoking her cigarette. And I just thought, that's not me anymore. I don't need to do that. I don't. You know, I can do all sorts of other stuff with my life. And the thing with my job, I mean, it was like, oh my God, do you know what I mean? I found the place that I'm supposed to be, at least for now. I don't know if I'm going to be there for another 10 years, but I found, like, you were my tribe. You know, you get me. And so do they. And they don't want to hide my light away because I've spent my whole life thinking that I wasn't good enough. And, you know, I tried to be beige, really. I'm not beige. I am not a beige person. There are some people that are quiet, and that's just not me. And I'm not going to apologize for who I am because the world needs me and the world needs you. You know, that's how we balance. And this is my work, my energy, my personality, I get to talk for 8 hours a day, almost when I listen, you know, is the place. And obviously, just by, you know, I go in every single day and I ask my higher power to help me be the best employee that I could possibly be. Help me, you know, to do the right thing and, you know, shine your light through me and out of my heart, God. And, you know, help me be tolerant and loving and kind. And I ask these things and then I go into work, you know, and I wanted to share about, like, my resentments. I don't really have. It's been quite a while. From the AA Big Book, Freedom from Bondage, there's a story about a woman who is sitting at the doctor's office and, you know, she's been working a program and she's feeling resentful and she picks up a magazine and story a priest writes about, you know, if you're feeling resentful to someone, pray for that person what you want for yourself, for them. You know, and I was at an AA weekend someplace and this woman was sharing that. I thought, I'll never, you know, do you know what that person did to me? I will never forgive that person. And she said, you just do this prayer twice a day for 3 weeks and I promise you it'll work. And I was like, no, it won't. But it did. After 10 days, all of a sudden, I started to feel a bit more love in my heart, or not necessarily love, but I started to feel less resentful and less poison towards this person. And so when I did my steps, my fourth and fifth step, what that did was it gave me clarity on nothing is my fault. It used to be either all my fault or you're my fault, but it gave me clarity on some stuff is yours, some stuff is mine. And then, you know, talk about it, share it, and then let it go. Clear the wreckage, clear the baggage. And so now, you know, I don't really have resentments. I don't. And if I do, at the end of my next step, hold on, I'm going to stop in a second. I meant to say this earlier because I thought I'm sort of blabbing, but not really blabbing program. At the end of the night, I usually try and do this is I do a 10th step and I, you know, list stuff that I think I could have done better, not necessarily wrong, things I could have done better. And then I always end with things that I've done well. I don't sort of go to sleep with the bad stuff, things that I think that I've done well. And, you know, sometimes there have been days, like in my early recovery, where the best that I could do was brush my teeth. You know what I mean? And here's, if you're new, is never compare your sobriety to anyone else's. You don't know their path. We don't know your path. And sometimes just brushing your teeth, sometimes just making a cup of coffee or peeing is all that you can do. And that's okay. You know, I have learned how to love myself in this program and take responsibility for my sobriety and my life. You know, I just, you know, I think about this job and, you know, I didn't lie or cheat, or I just used my program and I used my higher power and I didn't have to keep running out the door to smoke. I was me, and you know, I'm able to separate your stuff from my stuff. And well, that person is that way. There's someone who's sort of out to get me. She's this old woman. She sort of makes comments, and sometimes I pray for her because it's not about me. She's a very sad woman. You know, she's sad, and that makes me, well, not unhappy, but I pray for her that, you know, but I'm not going to say anything to her. I'm not going to feed her because it's not about me. You know, it's just sometimes the way I am can be annoying, you know, and that's okay. I'm learning in this program how to tone stuff down, how to say no, how to say yes, how to shine brighter, how to, you know, put my light down when need be, just how to be whoever I am. You know, I didn't know who I was before I stopped smoking, you know, and I still, you know, I can still have some addictions. I can still eat cake. I can still do a bit of this and a bit of that, but I'm very aware of it. They don't, you know, if something happens, it doesn't last for as long. The blues don't go as deep as they used to. I mean, I sort of passed in my last one about 8 months ago where I just thought, this is it. I think I'm going to kill myself, honestly. but that's what happens to me sometimes. I need to get myself so far against a wall before I actually do anything. I need so much pain before I do anything. And now I'm learning, like, you know what? I look at, why am I feeling this way about this person? Why am I feeling this way about this food? What? And, you know, I'm learning to sort of look at it in the now and the present, and then accept this is the way it is. I have to do what I have to do, whether I ate cake, a whole thing of cake. I have to do what I have to do until I don't have to do it anymore, you know, and I write on it, but I don't beat myself up because that doesn't help. And every single moment, every single day, I'm grateful. I wake up in the morning and I do 5 things I'm grateful for. I go to bed and I'm grateful. And I'm constantly talking to my higher power, and I'm constantly saying, I'm so grateful that I don't smoke. You know, I'm so grateful for the people that I've met in this program who have completely changed my life. You know, I'd love you. You know, some of you I like a lot. You know what I mean? I'm not going to lie. It's just not it's the way I am. But I've learned to sort of be as honest as I could possibly be and to be present, which to me, that's what not smoking has given me. It's given me the freedom to be present. I am not in NICA jail. The NICA demon has not put me in NICA jail anymore. You know, I was the one, actually, you know, I could have got out any time, but I was afraid. And if you're new and you're struggling, you know, if you think it's going to be easy, it's not. It's the reason that you smoked, because there's pain. You just have to, you know, try, say that you want to go, I want a better life. You know, that when I made a commitment that it's not an option, somehow that took the white knuckling away. Because I always say to myself, there's no nicotine left in the whole wide world. So if there's no nicotine, I've got to do something else. And by taking nicotine out of the equation, that I have to do anything else, that just made a huge difference to my Spidey. You know, I will never, ever, ever be able to show my gratitude to this program and the members and all the literature, because the literature in here, there's something for every situation that you're doing, whether it's the slogan, you know, the tips for gaining freedom that start with before, early recovery, or just quitting and after, you know, the newcomer's book, the year of miracles. There is so much stuff if you want it. You know, what do they say is a lot of people need to quit smoking, but sobriety is not for people who need it. It's for people who want it. You know, and if you want it, we are here. You do not have to be alone. Just remember that. You know, and if you're new, you want a meeting, check over here where it has like the little at or the A sign. Write those names down. Put us on your power list. And you message and you go, I would really like a meeting. And maybe I will say, you know what, I cannot do this right now. I can't open up a room, but let me contact so-and-so and see if that person can open up a room for you. And I would guarantee you most of the time you're going to have a room open, and it may start with two people. And then, you know, if you build it, it will come. And together, you know, I can't remember what Amy says, it's together we can, we can't do it together, but together we can do it, something like that, you know. This is a we program. Stay in the middle of the herd, you know. Your head may tell you, I'm okay, I can do it on my own. You cannot. Stop listening to your head. Your head's like a bad neighborhood. Don't go into it alone. You know, just tell it to F off, do whatever you need to do, and stay here with us. You know, even if you're smoking, stay in the room. Just, you will hear what you need to hear, but you don't beat yourself up, because you're going to have to smoke until you don't have to smoke anymore. Do you know what I mean? It's just your path. My path was how I got here, and your path is how you got here. And I cannot express, and I will wrap it up, because, you know, you give me an hour, I can still blab away. I will never be able to express my gratitude for who I have become, because I was willing to go nicotine-free and face my demons, which did not kill me. They actually, once I faced them, they all made me stronger. It made me stronger. And all the people I met along the way in order to get well. And, you know, you showed me your demons and I showed you mine. And then together, you know, and I'm so grateful. And so I'm going to stop talking, because I could stand on a street corner and share about my gratitude to Nick A and my higher power forever and ever and ever. And just my new life, my new life. And they don't know me as low self-esteem, you know, chain smoking, lying, hiding, isolating person. They know me as, I don't know, this new person, and I'm good with it. I am. You know, I'm proud of myself. I never would have said that before, but I'm actually proud of the person I've become, and I could not have been that person without this. But I had to make a choice. What was I willing to go to? What length am I willing to go to stay nicotine free? Any bloody length, I have to tell you. Smoking is no longer an option. Nothing. No, it's not. And that's my share. So thank you very much for giving me the opportunity. I was terrified, but then get me going up, blah, blah, blah. And thank you. Thank you very much.